The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Well, on today's show, we're honoring Black History Month and talking to Angela Marie McDougall. She's the executive director of the Battered Women's Support Services, and she also sits on a national roundtable addressing gendered violence, where she and two other leaders across the country have formed a Black Women's Caucus. Angela, great to have you back on The Pulse. Thanks for returning.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, David.
Yeah, and Happy New Year. I know we're far into it, but since we haven't talked to you yet on the program, it's great to have you here.
I'm really glad to be here, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, you know, the last time we talked, a few times in the earlier days of the pandemic, and then in the fall, we were really looking at some of the issues in the summer around Black Lives Matter and policing. And I know that those issues have, you know, not gone away just because the hot summer protests are not happening right now, but it is Black History Month, so I thought great chance to talk about some of these, how this intersects with your work.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, as a Black woman and a woman that was born here in Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, and Musqueam territory, I have, you know, I've lived, you know, as a Black woman in these lands, and in particular, my parents met in Hogan Valley, because Hogan Valley was kind of a place to be back at one time, and my parents met there, and I have, like, I just keep thinking so much just about what it was like to growing up in Vancouver around the same time, you know, being a child at the same time that the Hogan Valley of the Black community was being eliminated.
I had no idea you had a historic connection to that. That's incredible.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, being Black in Vancouver, because in so many ways our stories are our experiences, like, there just isn't a kind of a space or a kind of a recognition of there's so much of our experiences are really rendered invisible in so many ways. And so, I mean, this, you know, the part about the city as my hometown and being a Black woman, all of this is, all of this has been, it's really important for me, and also as someone that's been organizing around gender-based violence for a long time, and in thinking about how to address the roots. I mean, we talk about the role of colonization in the very making of the inequities that we see in Canada, and particularly as a contributing factor for the systemic stratification that we have as women, and then around race lines, and then also the vulnerability to gender-based violence, and so amplifying, finding a way to advance gender equity, and by making visible the experiences of Black women is something that's, you know, that's been a long time coming, and I have I've had the real privilege to be on an advisory committee that's working with the federal government to build out Canada's national plan on ending gender-based violence. And, you know, in that there's all kinds of things that we're examining, and also that I am advancing from, you know, this perspective of being part of this, you know, over here in this part of the territory now known as Canada. And that is, you know, of course, about the National Inquiry and, adding that vital report and the fact that the recommendations have not been advanced. And then also making visible the experiences of Black women and building some national consciousness of that.
Well, let's talk about this national program, because it's, I mean, all of these histories tie together into, you know, a history that has been attempted to be erased from Vancouver. And I think is often ignored at the national level, that people think that Black history in Canada is related to Toronto and Ottawa and Nova Scotia.
So Canada has not reached gender and racial equity. Canada's not reached gender and racial equity, you know, as an examination of the lives of women, Black women and girls, and gender diverse people's, you know, reveals. And so what a few of us that have been working to talk about gender-based violence nationally got together, Black women got together and created a Black Women's Caucus. And so Necca McGregor, who works at an organization based in Ontario called Women's Center for Social Justice, and Paulette Senior, who works at Canadian Women's Foundation, the three of us formed a kind of first line, first version of a Black Women's Caucus, and began, requesting from the federal government some recognition of the necessity to draw attention and to advance policy and service and awareness around the experiences of Black women, girls, and gender diverse peoples in Canada. And so we had, I think, some really great success in getting some commitment from the government in Canada to do that work. And so what it is right now is that we're getting ready to begin a five-year initiative that would advance gender equity by intentionally including Black women, girls, and gender diverse people in policy remedies that are being addressed more generally about gender disparities and race disparities. I mean, it's really that critical race theory that is often missing from a lot of things that we do in Canada. And certainly when we're talking about gender and when we're talking about equity. And so, as you've pointed out, that what the Black Lives Matter has been centering is about bringing that critical race lens, particularly around anti-Black racism, into the broader conversations, but also redressing the systemic and institutional structural inequities that are, grinding down on people's lives. So what that's meant is that we're doing this thing. We're getting ready.
That's great.
A first of its kind. It's historic. For a major initiative that involves building a national voice for Black women and girls and gender diverse peoples in terms of looking at gender equity and gender based violence, and then doing research to get some disaggregated data on the experience of gender based violence. And through that, looking at a real buy-in for Black women and girls and gender diverse peoples, and so it'd be largely community-based participatory action research to fill those gaps. I mean, one of the biggest challenges for Black women in Canada is this relative invisibility. I mean, you can't find statistics.
Can you say more about this? Like, why don't we have that?
Well, I mean, it grows directly from the Canada's policy, which didn't really end to eliminate Black people from these lands. And that was through, I think a real lack of acknowledgement that the enslavement of Africans was a huge part of early Canada. One of the biggest kind of, kind of gaps in information is about that reality.
Slavery on our soil.
Of enslaved Africans specifically.
Yes.
And what,
yes.
And there's Afua Cooper is, the scholar. She has done a lot of work in looking at that history. And one of the things that she talks about, which is quite incredible, is the how many enslaved Africans there were compared to how many quote unquote Canadians there were. And she mentions that in 1760, there were approximately 55,000 European settlers, and that were largely in the St. Lawrence colony. And with those 55,000 white people in that area, there were approximately 5,000 enslaved Africans. So if you think about it, that's a lot of enslaved Africans.
That's over a tenth of the population. That's, wow. Huh. Tell me, going back to when you formed this kind of the nascent Black Caucus at this gender-based violence committee, what was the kind of conversation around why this was so needed and why it was so essential, like to bringing to that conversation?
Well, I mean, I guess then in talking about the enslavement of Africans and thinking about the history of Black women in these lands, and the ways in which Canada's policies around immigration and, you know, policing have, you know, have really been to eliminate Black people from the from these spaces, and then to render invisible, eliminate through in that denying access to, you know, in terms of immigration, then containing those, you know, those Black folks, you know, through policies and through you know, through urban policies, you know, which we've seen in Nova Scotia, what we've seen in Ontario, and Hogan's Alley is another example of that, to basically to make render invisible our experiences. And so if you want to do research on Black people, you'll find almost no research, but there's 1.2 million Black people in Canada. And, you know, we can guess that, you know, little under, you know, 50%, or depending on if we're looking from a gender binary point of view, you know, 50% or 40% of those folks would are identifying as women. And so that means that there's, you know, we just don't have, there hasn't been a priority. It hasn't been an interest. And that comes directly through the, you know, through the, you know, through a very particular and very virulent form of racism that has that's been dedicated for Black people.
Now, in your decades of work on like fighting violence against women, is that an aspect that feeds into this and understanding the racialization of that violence?
Well, 100%. I mean, again, you know, yes, 100%. I mean, because the work that I've been involved in and through a number of different places, but through Battery and Support Services, is around looking at the role of colonization and looking at the, you know, the you know, race and legal traditions that grew out of European colonization that are baked into Canada. And so in that, we then we have an understanding of the status of women in Canada. And when we look at it from a, you know, an intersectional point of view, we start kind of breaking it down from a point of view of race, then we see then groups of women are, and in particular Indigenous women and Black women. And that grows directly from, you know, the race as a social and legal policy through the doctrine of discovery, through the colonization from, you know, going back from the 1400s until, you know, the 1900s all across the globe. And so what we want to do, so in understanding how that, you know, how that then has created vulnerability for violence, but also vulnerability in the sense of being some of the, you know, Black women being some of the least protected, but over-policed women in the world, but in particular in Canada. And we have some early evidence of that based on some other research that we've done that looks at how policing, how police respond to calls of gender-based violence, domestic violence, specifically sexualized violence, when a Black woman is a victim. And what, you know, and we're conducting some research right now that's telling us that the police often don't perceive, because of, you know, anti-Black racism, which we suspect is operating in the individual minds of individual police officers, when they arrive at a scene, that they don't think that they are seeing a victim. They come from the point of view that Black women in, just in general are criminal, and therefore could never be victims. And so arriving on a scene and making decisions to not follow their own policies. And so we have a disproportionate number of Black women that have been, you know, arrested for allegedly perpetrating domestic violence in spite of, you know, evidence to the contrary. And that can be, there's a number of different aspects of that. So we've done some preliminary look at that at BDOSS, but we're delving deeper into that. So this, here in British Columbia, so this national project will be to, you know, build that out in a major way all across the land to look at the policing, but also look at to what extent, you know, Black women are reaching out to services, to what extent the, you know, gender-based violence is being experienced by Black women, and what options have been available and where are the gaps and how do we advance more gender equity that has an anti-Black racism, you know, consciousness.
It sounds like what I just heard was that not only are Black women underprotected and overpoliced, but you also mentioned access to services. So this sounds like it's creating a barrier to people accessing services if they're worried they're being stereotyped, treated as a criminal, treated as to blame. That may actually block people getting help, whether from the police or other services.
It does. And it also, you know, anti-Black racism extends throughout all of our systems and institutions and community-based organizations. So, you know, Black women may be perceived, may get a unique kind of experience within transition houses or within community services, in part because they're, you know, there could be anti-Black racism that is, you know, kind of existing in the consciousness of workers. And so, you know, women may be more surveilled while they're in a transition house. They, you know, there may be, you know, we already know that Black women's children, when, you know, Black women come to the attention of child and welfare, that children are often apprehended at rates that are, you know, above, you know, above what we would expect in, you know, in a, you know, nationally. And so there's, these are the things that we want to examine and create that evidence that, you know, these are things that we know anecdotally that we want to create that evidence, which will allow us then, once we have that information, then we will be able to work to change that. I mean, we're doing that in a bunch of different ways already through the frontline work, but this will create you know, build on that anecdotal experiences and, you know, create a, you know, a linkage to that anecdotal experience through, you know, through another form of evidence, which would be the research that we're doing, in order to make visible Black women's experiences and then to, you know, hold systems accountable, but really ultimately to change the broader society and culture. Which would, you know, that would look at to the extent to which anti-Black racism is it embedded in all aspects of Canadian society.
And I know that Black and Indigenous women are significantly more overrepresented in federal prison populations.
And that, you know, again, is goes back to Black people have a really unique relationship to these lands because of enslavement and because of, you know, being stolen people and stolen, stolen people and stolen land. And the ways in which racism has been created is shaped very, very specifically to subjugate and to subjugate Indigenous people for all of the uniqueness of Indigenous people's experiences, you know, under colonization. And what we want to make visible is the unique experiences of Black people in, you know, in terms of colonization, and which the, you know, Africa, you know, well, that, you know, 84% of the Earth's land mass was colonized by European power. Most of that happened in Africa. Africa's a massive land base with, you know, and those, you know, the borders that have been drawn, you know, the now in terms of nation states grew largely through a colonial process. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is to make visible the experiences of Black people on these lands from a decolonial perspective, in particular women and girls, where our enslavement had, had, you know, real unique aspects. And so we want to point, draw a line from enslavement to contemporary times through, you know, and what's being manifested today, and to, you know, and to really show how Black people are unique, have a unique relationship to these lands, and women and girls' experience of gender-based violence grows directly through that.
Yeah, I actually want to pull up a stat here that relates to this from the Office of the Correctional Investigator. So although Black women make up 3% of the population in Canada, they're over 6% of federally incarcerated prisoners in women's prisons. And the majority of those were for crimes that related to either defending themselves from abuse or poverty-related crimes. And all, very often, 70% were the sole breadwinner for a family. They were a single parent of some sort. So a whole bunch of mess problems just all concentrated in one stat, you know?
There it is. And that stat is, you know, I'm glad that to have that statistic to, you know, it's one of the few statistics that we have, you know, about Black women's experiences in Canada, and that there it is. I mean, you know, we often Canada, you know, people will shy away or will be have discomfort or don't want to think that there's any relationship that would be, you have any comparison to the United States. The United States gives Canada a lot of cover because of how dramatic, you know, and how visible the anti-Black racism and violence and police violence and, you know, and subjugation and different aspects.
Right, people say, oh, we're not as bad as them. Oh, it's not as bad.
And so Canada has not reckoned with its anti-Black racism at all, mm-hmm. and only starting very in a very basic way. And if we understand that there's also a particular kind of misogyny that Black women experience that has to do with our enslavement, it has to do with the amount of melanin in our skin and to the extent to which our humanity is based on the amount of melanin that's, that, you know, in terms of European values, the least amount of melanin is the most kind of civilized. And this idea of who is civilized and who is savage. And so when you mix those belief systems, that ideology with misogyny, Black women get a very unique kind of subjugation. And then it's often based on what that stat you showed, what is criminalization, poverty, violence, vulnerability, you know, lack of support, over-policed, under-protected. And also, you know, that extends to the amount of support that Black women can get from community-based organizations as well, you know, as far as who's going to fight for Black women who are, you know, over-policed and under-protected, which groups are there to do that. And so anti-Black racism is baked in throughout Canada, including through services. And this is what we want to disrupt.
I want to ask you one last question. I know you've given lots of time today, Angela, but... on that note, you know, it's very inspiring to me to hear that you are, you know, joining with others across the country to actually really carry that work and do that storytelling and that those challenges. What's your biggest hope or pride that comes from, you know, all of this work to resist the erasure and the criminalization?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a life's work in a sense. What my hope is that we would be able to build a matrix of engaged, you know, connected Black women all across the country that are doing work in communities and broadly to advance gender equity through, you know, linking, you know, a critical race understanding. And that, you know, we're on the verge of that. We had a wonderful national conversation when we launched this, you know, last week, I think, a week's kind of all rolled together, you know, but there were over 200, you know, women that showed up from all across Canada to show up and be a part of that announcement. And there's a real feeling of this being long overdue and so many women of all generations wanting to be a part of that. And so, you know, it feels really exciting. It feels like a big responsibility and an enormous kind of responsibility to be effective in this. And I feel really excited about, you know, the Black Women's Caucus, you know, with NECA and with Paulette, that the three of us are going to, you know, begin that work in a really great way and to continue to add more folks to the, you know, to the caucus and develop the steering committee and then to work regionally throughout the lands. You know, coast to coast to coast. So I'm excited about what's ahead.
On behalf of our listeners, you know, we wish you all the best with that work and growing that circle. It sounds really needed at this time.
Thank you, David.
And thank you so much for sharing your time and your stories and your work with us today. Appreciate that.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to get to talk to you again.
Best wishes. Okay, we'll talk soon. And that was Angela Marie McDougall. She's the executive director of Battered Women's Support Services in Vancouver.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.